This is Lectionary at Lunch for March 4th, 2012, second Sunday in Lent. The Old Testament reading for the second Sunday in Lent is Genesis chapter 17, verses 1 through 7, and then verses 15 and 16. This reading actually backs us up chronologically from the Old Testament reading for Lent 1. In this selection, we are at a point in time when Isaac is still only a promise. Verse 1. Vayehi Avram ben tish'im shana v'teisha shanim. Vayera Yahweh el Avram v'yomer elal ani el Shaddai hith halek lifanai ve'ye tamim. Abraham, it happened when Abraham was 99 years, and Yahweh appeared to Abram, and he said to him, I am El Shaddai, God, the Mighty One. Then two directions, walk before me and be blameless or be whole. Now, I'm not going to make too much of Hebrew idiom for the use of numbers or for reporting a person's age. The expression that a person is a son of a certain number of years is an interesting one, however. We are products, as it were, of our length of days. The text says Yahweh appeared to Abraham, literally was seen. It's a niphal of ra'ah. It isn't necessary that such seeing is physically visual. After all, in the reading from Genesis 22, the root ra'ah denotes something other than physical seeing. Yahweh sees, too, the sheep for the sacrifice. He provides it. If you rummage through the life of Abraham and take note of the variety of ways in which God makes himself and his will known, you will observe that he appears, as here, that he speaks, that he appears specifically in a vision, Genesis 15, and that he appears in a particular form, as a man, in Genesis 18. So I think we must exercise a bit of reserve and recognize that God is not limited as to how he manifests his presence. God takes the name here, El Shaddai. It simply isn't clear how this name comes about. Shaddai occurs most often in Job, which suggests it is an ancient name. Etymology is always risky. If there is an association with the root Shaddad, then this is a rather fearsome name. He is the God whose might is indisputable, and there doesn't seem to be any room in this name for mercy. God directs Abram to walk before him. It's a hitpael of halak. So one of the dimensions of that stem is that it is iterative, sort of walking to and fro. See Genesis 3. In Job, it's Hashatan who myth halakes, goes about walking around, among other places. It can be that this is a directive to begin walking, and yet, since it occurs where it does in the Abrahamic narrative, it seems likely that this is an exhortation to keep on walking in the presence of God. The word rendered be blameless or blameless is tamim. The root tamam has to do with completeness, wholeness, as well as wholeness in the sense of being without blemish. God's directions here seem to have to do not simply with a code of conduct, but with an extent of relationship. God is calling Abram to belong to him and to him alone. Verse 2. Va'et na b'riti b'ni uveinaka va'arbe otka b'ma'od ma'od. and I will give or set my covenant between me and between you, and I will multiply or increase you sort of much by much, which is to say very greatly. ESV renders the etanah modally as that, or almost like in order that. But I think here, again, we need to be somewhat cautious or reserved. Abram's conduct and character must not be understood as prerequisites for receiving God's covenant. In fact, of course, the verb form is cohortative, volitive. It expresses God's determination to give Abram his covenant. Even in understanding the imperatives in verse 1, we need to take into account also that God's imperatives often may be performatives. What he commands, he performs. Verse 3, Vayipol Avram al panal, Vaydaber ito Elohim lemor. Abram fell on his face, and God spoke with him, saying and proceeding. Abram fell on his face. The implications of this, I think, are enormous, but they only show up after we've read just a little bit farther. ESV renders the second clause, and God said to him, not good enough in my view. The Hebrew is more precise. God spoke, davar, with him, the preposition et or et, ito. There is a difference, however subtle, in saying to and in speaking with. Verse 4, ani, hine beriti itach, v'hayita la'av hamon goyim. As for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you will be or become father of many nations. The opening clause is verbless. Here are its pieces. I, behold, my covenant with you. The independent personal pronoun ani, I, or as for me, is important. God announces first that the covenant is. In verse 2, he had announced his intention, his will to give Abram his covenant. Now it has been given. Abram has not proven himself. Even if the imperative to walk before God is to continue walking, there is no comment that looks back to prior performance. The only thing Abram has done here is to fall on his face. And I think that in view of previous episodes, especially Genesis 15, this falling is a sign of faith. To walk before God and to be blameless or whole or complete is to trust God, to take him at his word. And the first consequence or result of the covenant is delivered here, that Abram will become the father of many nations. Verse 5. V'lo yikare od et shimka Avram, v'haya shimka Avraham, ki av hamon goyim nethatika. You will no longer be called the name Avram, Abram, but your name will be Avraham, Abraham, because father of many nations, I have made you. And in fact, in view of the preceding promise and consequence of the covenant, here we simply have the declaration that God changes Abram's name to Abraham. Verse 6, V'hifrethi otka b'ma'od ma'od u'nathatika l'goyim u'malakim mimka Yetzeu. And I will make you fruitful, much by much, or exceedingly fruitful. And I will give you nations, I will give or almost make, establish you as nation in nations, and kings will come out or go out from you. The creation mandate to Adam and Eve included the direction to be fruitful, a kal of para. Now we encounter the hifil. What God directs, he performs. Verse 7. V'hakimoti et beriti beini uveinaka uvein zaraka achreka ledorotham liberit olam lihyot laka lelohim ulzaraka achreka. And I will raise or establish or even confirm my covenant between me and between you and between your offspring or seed after you to their generations as a covenant forever, to be or become for you a God and for your seed or offspring after you. This is one more action that God performs vis-a-vis his covenant. He will raise it, that is, he will confirm or establish it, hifil of kum, so that it will become a perpetual or eternal covenant from one generation to another. The essence of the covenant is that God will be God to Abraham and to his offspring. In our contemporary American culture, I suspect, the prevailing conception of what it is to be God is absolute freedom to act without any constraints. And in one respect, that is true. God is not constrained by anything. But that's what makes the God of the Bible so different. He constrains himself. This is what Americans simply don't understand about the true nature of freedom. The verses that intervene between here, the end of verse 7, and the resumption of the reading, namely verses 9 through 14, especially 9 through 14, deal with what Abraham will do to keep Shamar, the covenant, the institution of circumcision. Since this isn't part of the reading, this is not the place or time to spend on an elaboration of a theology of circumcision, except to insist that circumcision does not make one a member of the covenant, though it does mark one as such. Moving ahead to verse 15. Vayomer Elohim El Avraham, Sarai Ishtka Lo Tikra Eth Shema Sarai, Ki Sarah Shema. God said to Abraham, Sarai, your wife, will no longer call her name Sarai, but Sarah will be her name. And verse 16. Uverakti otha Vagam nathati mimena lika bain. U veraktiha vahayatha lagoyim. Malke amim mimena yihyu. And I will bless her, and also I will give from her to you a son, and I will bless her, and she will become a nation. Kings of peoples will come from, or will be from her. Here we have the God enunciates Sarai's participation in the covenant. She too receives a name change to Sarah. She will bear a son for Abraham. There must be a firstborn so that everything else can take place. So how do we go about preaching this particular text? The accompanying readings are Romans 5, verses 1 through 11, justification and peace with God, and Mark 8, 27 through 38, the first passion announcement, and with the disciples' rebuke, and then the call to self-denial as disciples of Jesus. In Genesis, an interval of 13 years passes without comment between the end of Genesis 16 and the beginning of Genesis 17. We can only wonder what Abram thought during that interval. Now, as before, God draws near to him without advance notice or fanfare and speaks. The promise is reiterated, but with still more specificity. Abraham and his wife will have a son. The promise is to be believed, no matter that it has taken this long, and no matter that it will take longer still, though now the pace will quicken. See Genesis 18, verse 10, and then chapter 21, verses 1 and 5. In Lent, we are invited to walk to and fro in the presence of God made flesh, the eternal Son of the Father. We know the story because we have experienced it before, in every previous Lent. On the other hand, each new Lent offers an opportunity to wait again and to consider again what it is to take God at His word. He assures those who will walk before Him, who will be holy, W-H-O-L-L-Y, His, that He will give and preserve His covenant, His promise, a son to Abraham and Sarah, the Son, His only Son, Jesus Christ, whom He loves, for us all.